The following audio is included in the Worldwide Church of God Library Collection. Please visit wwcg-library.com and explore the incredible truths that answer the mysteries of life.
You know, after hearing something like that, I feel like just sitting down and asking to come up and do that one more time.
Yeah, really.
Really inspiring. It's quite beautiful. It's amazing what God is able to do with human flesh. This earth, as Mr. Cole was talking about, the things that he can bring about, the changes that can be made, the many talents and potential that lie within human beings. And that is going to be somewhat of my topic this morning, but I guess some of you would like to write down titles. If you'd like to write down titles to your sermons, if you're taking notes, you might write down what I have, if you like. What will make the millennium work? What will make it work? In Isaiah, the second chapter, and other places in the Bible, this time that we are now looking forward to in a very formal way here at the Feast of Tabernacles, is mentioned. Isaiah, the second chapter, let's turn there briefly, and by way of reminder, and read it. Isaiah 2, beginning in verse 1, the word that Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. It shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. O house of Jacob, come you, and let us walk in the light of the Eternal. And in Isaiah, the 11th chapter, that theme is repeated. In verse 6, it says, The wolf at that time shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid. Comments expressing a time of peace and a time of safety, even permeating the nature of the animal. The calf and the young lion and the fatling shall together shall lie down, and the little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the suckling child, the little toddler, shall play at the hole of the axe. And the weaned child shall put his hand in the cockatrice den, which is a poisonous snake. And even they shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Eternal as the waters cover the sea. And this picture is a time of peace that we have not known in our lives. We have been born into a world, and it seems that we have been born into trouble, one difficulty after another. It seems that when you're in grade school, you have problems. You don't like the teacher. The bully beats you up after school. As you get older, you have your teenage problems. You know, when you're a teenager, you think, well, boy, just wait till I'm 21, and then I won't have any problems. I can do what I want to do. Nobody anymore is going to tell me what to do. And so you go off and join the army. And it seems to continue that life as we know it at this time is fraught with frustration and problems. The time that we look forward to will be a time of untold peace, something that will be strange to us, something I think we will get used to and learn to love very quickly. But it's going to take certain things to bring about this condition. You know, I used to think, when I first came into the church back in 1959, 1960, when I first started hearing these things, my attention was focused a great deal at that particular time in my early years on thinking about the millennium and what would bring it about. I had what I guess you would call a very immature understanding of God and the nature of God and what God is and how he functions. And so I'd like to just share with you some of the thoughts that I had at that particular time, and then share with you some of the present thoughts that I have, having been in God's church for a number of years, and studied the matter a great deal more in depth. In Zechariah, the 14th chapter, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with, there is a millennial scene described here. In verse 16, it says, "It shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations shall come against Jerusalem, brother, and shall, which came against Jerusalem, brother, shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, to be one with God. And it shall be that those who will not come up at that particular time, but all the families of the earth into Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not, that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith the Eternal will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So after reading these scriptures, you kind of get the picture that God gets a little bit upset at those who don't want to comply and keep the Feast of Tabernacles, participate in the kind of lifestyle that he has intended for all humanity. And this made quite an impression on my mind. And in verse 19, he mentions, This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And now when you read prior to verse 16 in this particular chapter, in Zechariah 14, other things are mentioned which to me were quite frightening and still are quite frightening for that matter, and left quite an indelible stamp on my mind. And an awe and a respect, and I think a healthy fear of God. Well, let's continue the thought. Right prior to the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, or the time in history that is depicted by the Feast of Tabernacles, there's going to be a great deal of pain, a great deal of suffering. As Mr. Cole mentioned this morning, that, heat, if you're around heat, there's pain associated with heat. If you're around pressure, there's pain associated with that pressure. And time, who of us here is as patient as we ought to be? And so we're talking about things that human beings don't naturally like to associate themselves with. But there is going to be a great deal of pain inflicted upon human beings prior to the establishment of this time called the millennium. It mentions in verse 4 of Zechariah, the 14th chapter, that his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the west, rather toward the east than the west, and there shall be a great valley, and half the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half toward the south. And you shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountain shall reach unto Azel. Yea, you shall flee like as you fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, the king of Judah. And the Eternal God shall come, and the saints with you. Well, this is the time of the second coming of Christ. And for those who are not a part of that group called saints who are with Christ at that particular time, it's going to be a mind-shattering experience. People are going to be in quite a state of fear, to say the least, to put it mildly. And it mentions the living waters that shall go out from Jerusalem in verse 8, and how men shall dwell in that area. In verse 12, reading on down rapidly, and there shall be a plague, rather this shall be the plague, wherewith the Lord shall smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet. Now, I have recollections of the book of Revelation unveiled last. Any of you remember that? Or 1975 prophecy, remember those pictures that Mr. Wolverton put in that book? Now, those things are still in my mind. I can recall them so vividly. Now, this is a frightening situation. And, of course, when you see something like this happen, it would tend to, if you were a bystander there, and you were not one of the ones that had this happen to you, it would kind of make a believer out of you. At least you'd just kind of sit down and shut up for a while. You know, if you were one of those who had been in rebellion against God, at least I would. I'd be very quiet. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand on their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. And Judah shall also fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together. Well, this is the time of God's intervention. Now, getting back to the statement that I made earlier, when I first began to understand the truth of God's plan, this made quite an impression on my mind. And perhaps you're a little bit like me, that's why I want to share it with you. I tended to think that, well, the thing that is going to make the millennium work is this kind of force. Because, you know, if you see this happening, that would make a believer out of you. You know, you just saw, you know, your best friend stand there and, you know, get vaporized. You turned into smoke. And all that's left is a little bit of ash like you have in one of your self-cleaning ovens. You tend to be a listener, wouldn't you? I thought, well, boy, if God's going to come back like that, you know how it mentions in the book of Revelation that God is going to come back, Jesus Christ is going to return with a rod and with a sword. I think, boy, well, now that I know, it's good. I'm glad that God called me. And there are a lot of people that I'd like to take a rod to. You know, there are a lot of people that I'd like to scrape on. Have you ever had these thoughts? I'm just sharing some of my human thoughts with you. When I first came to the church, there were a lot of things that I just wanted to get straightened out. Of course, not God was thinking about straightening me out, but I was thinking about maybe some other things that perhaps were offensive to me or people and conditions that I would like to have changed. And I just can't wait till I get a hold of my rod. Have you ever had that concept that you change, you're standing there wherever you are at the time that Jesus Christ comes back, and this change comes over your body? Now I've got it made. I'm going to go and take care of so-and-so if they're still around. Or I'm going to go straighten out a particular group of people. You know, maybe if you're German, you're going to straighten out the Russians. Or maybe if you're Russian, you're going to straighten out the Germans. Or maybe if you live in Kenya, you're going to straighten out Idi Amin or something. We all have these ideas of things that we want to straighten out as soon as we get that rod in our hand. And boy, we're going to crack a few heads. We're going to shape them up. We're going to either shape up or ship out. We'll get it straightened out. We'll get this millennium going. We'll show them who God is. We'll show them who the boss is. I don't have those thoughts anymore. I'm just saying this is the way that I used to think. Because I don't think that God is necessarily that way. Or that is not the only way that God is. You know, after Christ gets the attention of the nations, of the people, he's going to proceed to show them how to make life work. You know, Jesus Christ said, I didn't come to destroy. I didn't come to take men's lives. I came that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. But you know it is going to be necessary that Jesus Christ does come back with authority. But the kind of authority that is being used in these circumstances is not necessarily going to be the day-to-day mode of operation throughout the millennium. That is not going to make the millennium work and ensure its perpetuity. Having a bigger stick than someone else. Now, human history has shown that that kind of an approach to solving problems is not an ultimate solution. It might be a temporary solution, and I believe that God is going to use that kind of circumstance. He's going to come back as a disciplinarian, a very stern and a very strict disciplinarian, to get the attention of the people. But after he has their attention, then he's going to set about showing humanity how to make life work right. After all, isn't that what we're concerned about? You want your life to work right. And by right, we mean to have good health, to have a good sound mind, to have right relations between you and God. You don't want God angry with you, do you? You don't want him upset with you. You'd like to have good friends, good opportunities, good times, challenges ahead of you, to go ahead and become everything that your human potential will allow. Everything that God has made possible, you want to experience that. And it's nice to experience that without your hindering me or me hindering you and becoming whatever it is that God wants us to become. The incredible human potential that Mr. Armstrong has spoken of and written of is absolutely fantastic. But God is going to have to get the attention of people and explain that. You know, I remember, you know, getting the attention of people is, can be very difficult sometimes. I remember a story that Mr. Harold Jackson told me and had me come out of the city for a long time. I kind of smile and laugh every time I think about it. I think many of you know him. He's presently over in Africa now, West Africa, serving the people over there. But Mr. Jackson was from Iowa. He was born in Des Moines, Iowa. And you know, in Iowa, it gets very cold. And he was reared on in a farming area. It may have been a farm, I think. And they had a mule on this farm. And this mule had a mind of its own, like most mules do, I guess. And on these cold winter mornings in Iowa, this mule just didn't want to get up and go. I mean, you could kick this critter, you could pull on him, you could yank his chain, you could swat him across his rear end with the board, and he wouldn't move. The only way that they could get that mule to move was to build a little fire under it. Not kidding, so they get a little template wood, some sticks, some paper. Right about, you know, maybe a foot, you know, between his hind legs and a foot up toward the front, build a little fire. And that mule would start to feel the heat, and he'd kind of twitch his ears, and he'd slowly turn his head and look back, and it would get hotter, and he'd be good for a good day's work. But you had to get his attention before he would function as he was supposed to. And this is what God is going to do. The millennium working is not going to be a matter of just meeting out discipline, a more advanced technology, or getting rid of a certain race of people, like some would like to think, the Germans thought in World War II, or like Idi Amin thought, getting rid of certain tribes or other groups of people. We feel, well, if we just rid of those people, then everything will be all right. No, that's not the way the millennium is going to function based on that premise of getting rid of someone. It won't be a matter of possessing more material goods, of having all the gold and the silver and the jewels and the diamonds in your possession. People will be shown that a basic change in the pattern of human behavior is what is required to make life work right. Christ will get the attention of the people, and they're going to be taught verbally, in addition to using the tool of discipline. Discipline will not be dispensed with. But you know, I used to think that it was the only tool. Yesterday, in the sermon, it was mentioned that perhaps sometimes some of us who are parents have thought that the way to change human behavior, the only way to change human behavior, is to get a big stick and apply it to the area where it will do the most good. And I guess some thought that the scripture said, beat up a child in the way that he should go, and when he gets old, he will not depart from it. Well, you beat him up in the way that you think he ought to go, and as soon as he will depart from you. Because I have talked with young people in the church who went through that. They're still here. Some of them, but many of them are not. But discipline is a tool, but it's not the only tool. God is going to use verbal means of explaining how to make life work right. And he's also going to show by example. And I firmly believe that example is one of the strongest teachers that any of us will ever have, whether we be a child or whether we be an adult. We're all imitators. You know, they have a term that we ate this or we ate that. You see, little chimpanzees imitating. That is part of the nature that God has placed into us, to imitate, to follow an example, to emulate, and to want to have a model, to want to have a mentor. And that is not wrong, provided you don't follow the wrong example. But the examples that are going to be stamped during this particular time, from the beginning of this time that we just read about in Zechariah 14, all the way through and through the rest of man's human experience, is going to be example that is right, proper, and good. And the example of how to make life work properly. You know, God has the power to make people comply. And I'm going to dwell on this particular topic because I think that perhaps a lot of you are like me. And what I want to do is affect maybe a little bit of a change in your thinking about your responsibility. Now, when I say that God is going to bring these things about, the point I want to make is, in addition to a couple of others, is that you will be God. So if you have what I termed in myself, if you like me, a kind of an immature approach to leadership, to authority, to what it is to be God, I want to discuss that with you this morning and perhaps help you to change your thinking a little bit if you have this particular problem that I had at one time. Now, God has the power to make people comply with whatever it is that He wants. But there is a difference between compliance and character. If God wanted only compliance, He could have built some robots. And He could have programmed very easily to keep the Sabbath. He could have cycled a seven-day cycle in there, and every Sabbath day, those robots would stop dead in their tracks. I mean, they wouldn't blink. They wouldn't move, I wouldn't say a muscle. They wouldn't have muscle. They could have had muscle, but they wouldn't do anything. Everything just stopped totally dead, dark, still.
Thank you for listening to this audio file from the Worldwide Church of God Library Collection. Please visit wwcg-library.com and explore the incredible truths that answer the mysteries of life.